know, interestingly enough, the vast majority of people who have given a great deal of thought to their own wishes have either written down or talked about their wishes with someone else. And when I say the vast majority, we're talking to the tune of 88%. Yeah, 88%. Now, notice this. Americans with more education and higher incomes are more likely than those with less education and lower incomes to have communicated their wishes for end-of-life care. The white community is more likely than the black community or Hispanic community to have made their wishes known. And those who have not written down or talked about their wishes are more likely than those who have made their wishes known to say they would want doctors and nurses to do everything possible to keep them alive if they were facing a dire medical situation. Again, now grab hold of that. Those who have not written down their wishes or talked about their wishes are more likely than those who have made their wishes known to say they want doctors and nurses to do everything possible to keep them alive. So, and that's interesting. If they have, you know, I guess you could say expressed an unwillingness to write down their wishes or to talk about their wishes, then when a dire medical situation arises, they wish to be kept alive at all costs. So I guess this decision not to write down their wishes, not to discuss their wishes, should a dire medical situation arise, may be an indication that they just don't want to think about it. Maybe it's just too scary for them to think about dying, to think about being dead. And that's one of the reasons I asked that question earlier on in the conversation. Where are you when it comes to the thought of dying, your body's ability to remain alive, fading. And then related to that, the thought of actually being dead, no longer alive. And my guess is, as I mentioned, some people are probably just so uncomfortable thinking about dying, thinking about being dead. They just don't want to deal with whatever comes after death. And so they don't want to think about being dead and they don't want to die. They're much more likely to tell the doctors and nurses, do everything you can to keep me alive. Attention to preparation for and preferences about end-of-life medical treatments also are correlated with age. Younger adults, as I mentioned, especially those who are ages 18 to 49, are less likely than their older counterparts to have thought about these issues. Let me share with you some other findings from the survey. Many Americans have faced end-of-life medical issues through experiences with friends or relatives. 47% of adults say they have a friend or relative who has had a terminal illness or who has been in a coma within the last 5 years. This experience cuts across most social and demographic groups, including age, gender, education, and religious affiliation. And about half of these adults, 23% of the general public, report that the issue of withholding life-sustaining treatment arose for their loved one. Here's another finding. 78% of the public says that a close family member should be allowed to make decisions on behalf of a patient toward the end of life if the patient is unable to communicate his or her own wishes. At the same time, a substantial minority of adults, 38%, say that parents have a right to refuse treatment on behalf of an infant born with a life-threatening defect, while 57% say such an infant should receive as much treatment as possible regardless of the defect. And notice now, they're not talking about a defect that will simply make it difficult for the child to enjoy good quality of life. In other words, to enjoy being able to run and play like most children. Not that. They're saying life-threatening. The defect could actually cause a child to die. 57% say such an infant should receive as much treatment as possible, regardless of the defect, while 38% say that parents have a right to refuse treatment on behalf of a child with a born with a life-threatening defect. And here's the third major finding that they came up with. In an aging society, Americans see a number of characteristics and functions as important to a good quality of life. 49% rate being able to talk or communicate as extremely important for a good quality of life in older age. 45% see being able to feed oneself is important for a good quality of life. 44% say getting enjoyment out of life and living without severe, long-lasting pain, 43%, are extremely important for a good quality of life in older age. Adults ages 75 and older are less inclined than younger generations to rate 7 of the 8 characteristics included in the survey as important for a good quality of life. How about an aging America with limited attention to preparation for dying? As we know, advances in health and medicine have helped Americans live longer, with the average life expectancy in the U.S. now being 78.7 years. Small but steady increases in longevity, coupled with stagnant or declining fertility rates over the past several decades, have led to a growing elderly population. What they're saying is, with the elderly making up a greater percentage of the total population, partly because the elderly are living longer and because we have had fewer new babies being born. The share of the total U.S. population, including children and adults, that is age 65 and older, has more than tripled over the last century, rising from 4% in 1900 to 14% in 2012, and is expected to reach a fifth of the total U.S. population by the year 2060, one-fifth of the total population, U.S. population, by year 2060, according to projections by the U.S. Census Bureau. However, about 27% of U.S. adults say they have given either no thought or not very much thought to their own wishes when it comes to end-of-life medical treatment. You know what? We need to face it, ladies and gentlemen. There is no doubt that not all decisions are easy. And you know what? Some situations aren't even easy to face, much less think through on a careful basis. And that's understandable. But you know what? It can be so helpful to go ahead and think things through so that we don't end up making these decisions harder for those who survive us. When we come back, because we are going to talk about that some more at a later date, maybe later this week, as a matter of fact. Also wanted to take a look, though, at something else that has to do with religion. You know, we've been hearing about the Arab Spring. We've been hearing about what was happening in Iraq, particularly after the invasion of Iraq a number of years ago, the pullout, etc. As we've been listening to all of that, we've been hearing about some of the conflict between Sunnis and Shias. I'd like to take a look at some of the information that Pew Research is sharing with us about how the Sunnis and the Shias themselves are seeing the possible conflict.